You don't have to answer this question out loud, but I want to pose a question to you, and I want you to think about it. Have you ever had a boss in your life that you really, really, really liked? Have you ever had a boss in your life, somebody that was a manager over you or some sort of leader over you, and somebody that you really connected with and that you really, really enjoyed being in their leadership? Or have you ever had a boss in your life that you did not like, and you did not like being under their leadership? And as a matter of fact, you couldn't wait to get out under their leadership. And maybe some of you are in a position like that right now, and you can't get out of their leadership because there are no jobs, and so you can't move. There is, in this world, great leaders, people that when they lead organizations or groups of people, people flock to them and they love to work. And then there are other groups of leaders that are simply there to do their job, and nobody likes working for them, and they're very difficult to work for, and they're not very effective. And you know in your life, because you've seen both kinds of leaders, haven't you? I guarantee you, you've seen both kinds of leaders in your life. And the question that I want to ask you this morning is, what is the difference between the one leader and the other leader? What is it in a leader that makes people want to be a part of their team, wants to work for them, wants to be a part of the organization, versus those leaders that they can't wait to get out of it? And you've experienced this in your life. I was looking back at my own career, and I was going to try to identify both types of leaders. The problem is, as I looked back at my life, I've only worked for about six people in my whole entire... Isn't that just the craziest thing you've ever heard of? I counted them up. It's six people. And they were all okay. But I've seen them interact with other people, and I've noticed that some of them, even in that six, there have been some that have been fantastic that people want to work for, and there have been others that people couldn't wait to get away from there. Today, we're continuing our sermon series on the book of Nehemiah, and we're going to take a look at Nehemiah because I believe Nehemiah was the type of guy that everybody wanted to work for. And he did certain things that made everybody want to work for him. And if we look at the life of Nehemiah and found out what it is about his life, maybe we could apply that into our situation, in our life. If we're leaders, we can apply it in our leaders, and we can learn from God's holy scripture. So we're going to turn over to Nehemiah chapter 5, and we're going to look at verse 1, Nehemiah chapter 5, verse 1. And just to set the stage for you, we're now in chapter 5. Nehemiah was in Persia. He heard that the temple had been rebuilt, but that the wall around the temple had been was destroyed. Nobody seemed to care about that. God laid it on his heart that he needed to come back to Jerusalem and rebuild the wall. He got permission from the king. He got escort. He got money. He came back to Jerusalem. He got all the people excited, and they started rebuilding the wall. There was a little bit of an opposition. They fought that opposition. They got the wall to half height. And now we get into chapter 5, and we're finding out what the next issue is. And the next issue is this, chapter 5, verse 1. Now the men and the wives raised a great outcry against their fellow Jews, and some were saying, "We and our sons and our daughters are numerous, and in order for us to eat and to stay alive, we must get grain." Remember, it was an agrarian society back then. And others were saying, "We're mortgaging our fields, our vineyards, and our homes to get grain during the famine." And still others were saying, "We've had to borrow money to pay the king's tax." Ah, we've had to borrow money to pay the king's tax on our fields and our vineyards. "And although we are of the same flesh and blood as our fellow Jews, and though our children are as good as theirs, yet we have to subject our sons and daughters to slavery. Some of our daughters have been already enslaved, but we are powerless because our fields and our vineyards belong to others." So Nehemiah comes in, he gets all the people excited, they start rebuilding the wall, and then what happens? Then life hits. They've got grain, they've got taxes, they've got issues, they've got sons and daughters that they need to feed, there's a famine in the land, and now all of a sudden what looked like a great project to build up this wall Now they wake up in the morning, they say, well, wait a minute, we still have to live our life, we still have to eat. You know, thanks, Nehemiah, you come in here and you get us all excited to rebuild the wall and everybody pitches in, we got it half height, but look at the sacrifice that we've had to do to build this wall. And we're still living in a famine and we still have this incredible oppressive tax and it's just one more thing that I got to do. You know, I was doing fine, I was living my life, and you come in and now all of a sudden you put this task on me and now I can't keep it all together. And Nehemiah, it's all your fault. I can't believe that you do this to us. Think of the burden that they were experiencing and then the extra burden that they were having because they had to build this wall. But see, there's a fundamental principle of leadership that I think Nehemiah knew, and I want to give you this fundamental principle of leadership, and it's this. People cannot devote themselves and devote their time to a task when they are worried about something else in their life. Now, actually, I think men do this better than women. If you've ever seen, you know, the studies that show men and women, men are very compartmentalized, so they can actually work on one task. And in women, apparently, their brain is all like spaghetti, and everything's connected to everything else. I mean that in a good way. But they can't, and it's generalizations. Jennifer did a presentation on this a couple weeks ago. And she said at the beginning of the presentation, whenever you talk about the human brain, the difference between male and female, be very careful because all of a sudden you're treading on holy water. So, obviously I'm treading on holy water. But the fundamental truth is this. If you're worried about something in your life, it's very, very then difficult to concentrate on other areas of your life. I mean, you've experienced this, haven't you? There's a guy who was named Abraham Maslow, and in 1943, he wrote a paper called A Theory of Human Motivation, and it's come to be known as Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. And what Maslow said, and for many, 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 many years, this was the gospel truth in human psychology, was this, that you had to meet each level of needs before you kind of got up to the top of the pyramid. And he showed it as a pyramid. And at the bottom of the pyramid was this. You have to have your physiological needs taken care of. You have to have food. You have to have air. You have to have water. You have to have clothing. You have to have shelter. Those types of things are a basic need. And if you don't have those needs, you can't move up the pyramid. And then after that, he calls the physiological needs or the safety needs. You have to have personal security. You have to have financial security. You can't be worried every second about where your next meal is going to be coming from or the security of that sort of thing. You also have to have, then the next level of the pyramid is the health and well-being and safety against accidents. And then the next level of the pyramid is love and belonging, friendship, intimacy, family. And then if you have all that, then you get the next level, which is esteem. Being respected by those people around you. And then once you have all these things on the pyramid, then you get to what Abraham Maslow said was the top of the pyramid, which was this, self-actualization. Have you ever heard of that term before? Self-actualization. It's basically reaching your full potential. Or as Maslow said in his paper, it's this, what a man can be, he must be. But if any part of that pyramid breaks down, you can't reach that self-actualization. Now, studies have been undertaken since then that really shows that it's not necessarily a pyramid, it's kind of like a circle. And that you need all of those things in your life as a balance. And I would say that you do need all those things in your life as a balance, and the thing that's in the middle of that circle is your faith and your relationship with God. And if you have that in balance, and then everything else falls into place. But I digress. Abraham Maslow said the same thing, that you need to make sure that all those things in your life are in balance. So what happened to Nehemiah? He comes in, he has the people start building the wall, and he comes to find out that the things in their life weren't in balance. And so when they start building the wall, the things that were out of balance all of a sudden start to go haywire, and they can't handle it. they can't live building the wall and having their life out of balance in the same time. And so the question is, does that apply in this world today? Are there things in your life that are out of balance, and that when the stresses and the pressures of your life come into play, all of a sudden things get haywire and you can't deal with it? And as a leader, do you recognize that there are people in your life that are human beings and their lives may have issues that need to be dealt with, and until they deal with those issues, they're never going to be able to be 100% on the task that you give them? That's the question that Nehemiah faced. I think that's the question that all leaders faced. And if you're a leader in this world, if you're a Christian, God calls you in very many areas to lead, and there are times in this life when we're leading people and their lives are out of balance. I remember years and years and years ago, one of the people I worked for was a very, very strict manager of the firm, and everything had to be done just perfectly. And every once in a while, he would come down really, really heavy on people who were working at that organization. Really, really heavy. And as I looked around, I noticed that there were managers in that organization, and some of them, what they would do is they would put like an umbrella of protection over the people that they managed. And they would go to that guy and they would say, listen, you put those people under me, and you need to let me deal with them. Let me nurture them and let me be the manager to them. Let me work on their lives, figure out what the issues are and help them grow. And I used to call it the umbrella, because I saw it. There were two types of leaders. There were those that didn't do this, and there were those that put this umbrella of protection around those that they led. And they would sit with these people, and they would talk to them, and they'd try to understand what's going on in their life, and they would try to pour themselves out into these people so that their lives could get better, so that the relationship could be better, and they would give up of themselves for these people. See, now that's what I believe God calls us as leaders to do. To not just focus on the task at hand, but as leaders, we're called to be Jesus to these people that are under us and to pour out our lives in them so that they can grow in their life and so that they can be more effective in their family, in their homes, in their work, in their jobs, in their careers. That's what God calls us to do. And I would say that if you thought about the people at the beginning where I said those leaders that you enjoyed and those leaders that you didn't enjoy, the leaders that you really appreciated, I'm almost 100% that they were the ones who took the time to pour themselves out into your life. What did Nehemiah do? Nehemiah did two things in our text this morning. When he realized the incredible burden that was happening in the nation of Israel as they were building the wall, what was it? It was taxes. They can't get. So Nehemiah did two things. First of all, he went to the nobles and officials and says, why are you charging so much taxes? You need to stop that right now. These are God's people. They're hurting. You need to get rid of the taxes. And what did they do? They stopped the taxes. As a matter of fact, Nehemiah shook out his robe and said, if you violate this practice, then I'm going to shake you. God's going to shake you out too. And so they did. They stopped the taxes. Almost immediately overnight, the oppression that was coming from the taxes was gone away. And then Nehemiah did something else, which is just absolutely incredible. Apparently, he was named to be the governor of the land, the governor over Jerusalem from King Artaxerxes. I can never say that. King Artaxerxes. He had been named governor of the land. And so while he was there helping build the wall, he was entitled to all this free food and all this free grain. And Nehemiah apparently was well-to-do enough, and he was able to say, you know what, while I'm here, I'm not going to put that additional burden on the people. And he still did all the governor duties that he would do, but instead of having the people pay for it, because it was a substantial amount of food, it was like in verse 18, an ox, 6 choice sheep, some poultry prepared for me every day, and every 10 days an abundant supply of wine of all kinds. All of that, this ostentatious, because when you're the governor, you have to host people. You have to have people come in. He paid for it all himself and did not put that burden on the people. King Artaxerxes had given him the governorship, he comes down and he doesn't even enjoy any of that. He pays for it out of his own pocket. Nehemiah was a man of God. Nehemiah was a man after God's heart. He didn't just want to build the wall. It wasn't just the task that he was after. He was there to build relationships. He was helping the people become whole again. It was never about the wall. It was about bringing people together again as a community so that they would be proud of themselves once again. And when the tax and the burden and all that came on these people, he took it away. And he poured out himself into that community. Why was Nehemiah successful? I'll give you three reasons. First of all, as we've seen over and over and over and over again, Nehemiah, first and foremost, was a man of prayer. Even from the first chapter, we can see how Nehemiah constantly was in prayer. And I think that helped him. Because when you pray, you ask God, what do you want to do? Imagine what it would be if every morning, and some of you do this, every morning you pray and you say, God, in this day, I want you to show me what it is I can concentrate on. And I only want to do that thing. And when you pray, this is why I believe Martin Luther was so successful. He prayed 45 minutes every morning. And you say, how could he spend the time praying 45 minutes every morning? It's this. At the end of that prayer time, he knew exactly what he wanted to do that day. He said, I'm going to focus on this and this alone. He didn't spuriously go around all different things. He focused on the job that God had given him to do. Think about that. And if we would simply just pray to God, I believe that every minute you spend in prayer comes back to you tenfold. Because God says, that stuff, don't worry about it. This stuff, I want you to worry about that. I think Nehemiah was a man of prayer. Obviously, Nehemiah was a man who managed his life very well. He had become cupbearer to the king. And when you manage your life well, you've got the resources to pour into other people. And Nehemiah did that. When he came to Jerusalem to rebuild the wall and things started to fall apart, he took a significant financial hit in order to let those people continue on. And that was a great thing. But here's the biggest thing that Nehemiah did, is that he was willing to invest of himself into other people. He saw that leadership just wasn't building the wall, that leadership ultimately was a relationship, and that all of those people that were working on it, he was leading them. They were following him, and he took that relationship, and he had trust in that relationship, and he poured himself out into those people. Think about the greatest leader that ever lived in this life, Jesus Christ. And what did he do? All the other religions of the world, God is some far-off, distant God that doesn't get involved that much in his creation, but not our God. He just didn't sit on his throne managing from on high. He became flesh and dwelt among us and poured out himself among us. Because none of us are that great of a leader. None of us manage our lives that well. None of us have all the resources to do that. And we are all sinful people, and yet God still came and poured out his life into us. Think about that. And a church, if you think about a church, we are one of the best places to incubate leadership principles because we have people of God who can pour themselves out and bring other people up also. Who is the greatest leader that you've ever had in your life? Who didn't you enjoy? Who did you enjoy? I'm kind of an unusual person because that person is the exact same person. The person that I enjoyed the most was the person that I didn't enjoy the most. It was my father. I worked for my father in high school and college. He had an engineering firm. It was a very, very small engineering firm. I absolutely loved my father. But sometimes he would infuriate me like you would not believe. But I think he was a Nehemiah leader. Because the people that came in and worked at that firm, that engineering firm, Hook Engineering, he just didn't see them as employees. He saw them as people who needed things in their life that he could provide. He poured out his life. He poured out his love for Jesus Christ. He poured out his faith. He poured out his heart to every single person that came in that door from the moment that I started working there to the moment he closed the doors. A phenomenal man. I, it wasn't until I started working on this sermon and looking at the leaders in my life that I realized how much he did for the people that worked for him and how privileged I was to be able to see that. And yet, he still did drive me nuts every once in a while. But you see, our God has poured out himself into you and loves you so much. He wants you to be a Nehemiah leader no matter where you are in this world. And I pray that God give you the wisdom and guidance to do that. In Jesus' name, amen.